Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Old song. I know every crack in these dirty sidewalks of Broadway, where hustle's the name of the game. Nice guys get washed away like the snow and
the
rain.
Glenn Campbell?
Oh, sure.
It's Ryan Kelly Morning After. This is 590 The Fan KFNS. My name's Tim McKernan, best in the business. And I guess that's accurate. I don't think of it. But I guess if you kind of lay it out, it's like, yeah, I guess so.
And you've been told that a million times by your dad and some of the lemmings.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So what you're told and what you're taught becomes your reality.
Yeah. Even though, like, on the surface, I'm like, I'm just like you, the listener. But then I think about it, I'm like, no, I guess I'm better.
Yeah.
Doug, the top 25 for the 2018 college football season's out.
Well, can we recruit a little bit first? Can we have a practice session? Can we see who's even going to be on the team before we rank the clubs?
Who do you think is the favorite to win the 2018?
Alabama.
Wow, have you seen this?
No. Aren't they the favorite every year?
Who do you think's the second?
Oh, Clemson, Georgia.
Hey, you guys were reading this list.
Well, the number one recruiting class. So,
Who do you think's fourth?
Oh,
Oklahoma.
No.
Can I have initials, please?
O S.
Ohio State.
Yes.
Yeah, right on that one.
And then Michigan.
Who's three? Clemson.
Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, or excuse me, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, then Ohio State.
Pretty much the same list you could have made for the last 20 years.
Let's see, who would be the most surprising team near the top? God, I don't know there. I mean, it is like
Central Florida get in there anywhere?
Blue Blood Festival. I still have not seen Central Florida.
What did you think of Central Florida claiming themselves number one and the governor even saying they're number one?
Well, I just opened the segment by claiming myself to be the best, so I respect it. Missouri is 100-1, which is kind of hot, good, as weird as it sounds.
No, that's not bad.
Along with Missouri at 100-1 are teams like Oklahoma State. They must be losing a bunch of people. What the hell? That's a team that was in the top 10 for much of the year. Oklahoma State's 100-1. Central Florida's 100-1. Boise State, Arizona, and Mississippi State. And I think Mississippi State would be like 50-1 if it weren't for the Stingray disappearance.
Do you like Central Florida within the state acting like they are national champions? Do you get a rise out of that? The governor proclaiming them national champions and
I mean,
things of that ilk.
I like it in the sense that it points out the flaw in the system, and the system, from my standpoint, is flawed. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, the two teams that that played for the SEC championship. Or they beat the team that was in the SEC championship that beat both Georgia and Alabama. They were playing for the national championship. I don't know. Let's find out from a guy who played for Roll Tide and also right here in St. Louis with the Fighting Rammies. Doug, you remember them.
Oh, sure.
Joining us right now on the Appliance Discounter phone lines, three-time national champion with Alabama, drafted by the St. Louis Rams, currently an analyst on the SEC Network and ESPN Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the program Barrett Jones. Barrett, good morning.
What's up, guys? Glad to be here.
Great to have you on the show. What's it like as a guy who played for Alabama to watch a game of that caliber last night?
Yeah, it was wild. I'm actually just pulling out of Atlanta right now. It was a crazy night for all Alabama fans. You can hear my voice is a little bit tarnished, but it was great. It was an extremely emotional game, and I've never been a part of anything like that, I don't think, in the stands. Just absolute pandemonium in the Alabama section, so it was a really fun night, and really happy for the players that they got to experience something like that, and it'll be something they remember for the rest of their lives. So it's, again, an awesome moment, an incredible football game. And, you know, I think that even people who were upset about it being the All-SEC championship game, I just can't imagine anyone watched the second half of that football game and wasn't pretty entertained by the two teams. And, you know, to me, that looked to me like clearly the two best teams in the country. So I think it erased all doubt of whether or not they got it right, whether or not the system worked. I think the system, the way it is right now, is great. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it creates interest in the game. Obviously, you know, people are hating on it right now because it's two SEC teams and people don't like that. But hey, if you don't like it, then you need to beat them. You know, so it was I think a lot of fun, and I think it was a great result because my team won. But you know, I think it was a great, probably the best playoff we've had overall. We had two overtime games. We had a lot of incredible moments.
As an Alabama guy and a guy who played for Nick Saban, what are you thinking at halftime when you see him make the quarterback switch?
Yeah, I was shocked. I was really shocked he did it. You know, that's really what makes him the best, I think, because he's never afraid to adapt. And you know, there's a lot of great coaches over time. You know, but I think that one of the signals to a truly great coach is a guy who can adapt with the times. And Coach Saban has shown he can do that, you know, whether it's hiring Lane Kiffin or doing a lot of other things that nobody's expected him to do. He's always shown the capacity to kind of have that humility to say, let's try something new. So he did it last night at a huge time, and it paid off in a big way.
How well do you get to know him when you play for him? Some coaches are more hands-on than others, and what was it like playing for him?
I know him very well, and I really love playing for him. I would love my son to play for him. He's a great coach and just an awesome guy. So he's you know, obviously a disciplinarian and runs a tight ship and all the things that you expect, but I think there's another side to him that about he really, really cares for his players. And, you know, most players who played for him will tell you that, how much he cared for him, how much he helped him out. You know, it means a lot to him to help his guys. So if I had to do it all over again, I would absolutely play for him again. And I just love being around him. And he taught me so much, not just football. You know, taught me a lot about life, how to be a better worker and a better husband and one day father. And, you know, just kind of I'm really appreciative for the man he made me into.
There are some times where a coach only shows one side to the media. Sometimes that's a necessary part of the job. You're a guy who's in the media now. Do you think that Nick only shows like one side of himself when he's dealing with, you know, media situations?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely press conferences are not his favorite. That's the only thing you watch of him. Then, you know, but he actually, it's kind of a misnomer. Like the guys who cover him every day, like, love his press conferences. He does a great job answering questions and giving thoughtful answers. I mean, he just occasionally will have a blow-up, which, by the way, the local guys love that too because it's a great story. And so, you know, I think that, you know, all you see is his clips on ESPN of him blowing up, and, you know, you think that's how he is all the time. That's just that's misleading because there's really a totally different side to him. And obviously, when he's not doing the media, you know, there's a much different side to him. You know, his favorite part of the day is practice. He loves getting out there and practicing and helping guys get better. And so, yeah, I mean, he's got a fun side. He kids around. And, you know, I think if you watch some of his other interviews and stuff with Tom Rinaldi, and some of it, you know, you can kind of see his personality coming out. He loves what he does. He loves teaching the game. He loves growing these players. So it was another amazing chapter into what I think is the greatest coach of all time in college football.
When you see his blow-ups all the time, I think a lot of the country thinks he's always like that. I guess he just doesn't care at this point, doesn't have to.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, I think he cares. I just, it's, again, it's just such a small part of what it is. And, you know, normally he kind of has it planned on what he's going to come in there. You know, Nick Saban never loses his temper. Like, he doesn't actually ever get mad. Like, anything he does is planned out, you know, to have an impact on his team, to kind of, you know, like there's a purpose and a plan for what he does. And so, you know, a lot of times he comes in there and he wants to make a certain point, and, you know, some poor reporter asks a question maybe that sets him off, and he makes the point. So, you know, I think it's definitely all part of a plan of getting his guys locked in and focused. But, you know, I think if, you know, that's the only thing you see of him, maybe that's what you think about him, but that's certainly not the Nick Saban that we see every single day.
You talked about Saban's choice to switch out quarterbacks with the young player Tua. I guess everyone's going by his first name because it's easier to say than the last name. And I know he's got a great resume, and, you know, he was a well-thought-of recruit. But did you have any idea what you were getting when he came into the game?
Well, you know, I had a little bit of an idea. It's Tua Tagovailoa, and, you know, I'd been, you know, to practices, and I talked to a lot of people around the program. You know, they told me this kid is has really been lighting up in practice and has really looked good. And, you know, they've been around a lot of guys who are really special, and they think this kid has a chance to be right there among the some of these Alabama great names. So I think I did have a little bit of a sense that we were getting a guy who could really sling it and who understood the game. And, you know, I think just his passing route tree is probably a little bit bigger than Dylan's, and his comfortability in the passing game, which I think we saw immediately when he came into the football game. So, yeah, I did have a good idea of what it was going to look like. I think, you know, I'm not saying I expected it to be quite that good. I don't think anyone expected quite that, but it was, you know, as far as his style and the type of play calling, it was pretty much what I expected it to be.
And Hurts showed unbelievable class in the aftermath of being replaced, and his team still getting a win. What do you think is going to be the path to quarterback going forward? Because obviously they...
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. Hurts was a great guy and a great teammate. And, you know, again, anyone who's been around the program knows what kind of guy he is. And so I don't think that surprised me at all the way he reacted, just because, you know, Tua's been cheering for him and rooting for him all season, and he did the same for him. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens. It's a little early for that. I'm sure they're just kind of letting the dust settle and celebrating right now. But, you know, I think same thing at Georgia, you know, with Jacob Eason. I would not expect both of those guys to be there next year, but you never know. You never know what can happen. A lot can happen between now and then, but should be interesting to watch it unfold.
Hey, Barrett, you mentioned at the outset of our interview, as Barrett Jones, the former Alabama offensive lineman and member of the St. Louis Rams, currently with the SEC Network and ESPN Radio as our guest on the Appliance Discounter phone lines, that you like the current system. I'm curious on this one, what you like or would dislike about this idea. I'm sure you've heard it at least discussed in some capacity. Moving it to an 8-team playoff, limiting it there for real, with the 5 conference champions and then 3 at-larges seated by a committee. And if you do have a group of 5 teams, such as Central Florida, go undefeated, they automatically qualify as one of the 3 at-larges. Do you like or dislike that idea, and what would your reasoning be?
Yeah, I dislike it. You know, I think I understand what you're saying, and to me, yeah, that sounds more fair, and I get it, but I think the thing you have to really protect about college football, what makes it great, is the regular season. And, you know, I know that's what everyone said about the 14 playoff, but we still have a great regular season right now. And that's why people love college football, is because of that regular season. And I think moving to 8 teams, you know, now we're talking about 2 losses for some of these teams and still getting in. And that just doesn't sit well with me. I mean, I think this year is a perfect example, and I know a lot of people are using this year as an example of why we need an 8-team playoff. I use it as an example of why we like the 14 playoff, because if you look at college football as a whole, the amount of conversation and argument and, you know, everything that was created based on arguing about these 4 teams, that, man, that's fun. That's awesome. And that's what, you know, drives this excitement and this, you know, I guess, just passion about who should be in and who shouldn't, right? I just don't think that's going to cause more people to turn their TV off because their team is not in. I think it actually increases viewership and increases interest. So I love it the way it is. You know, there's always going to be argument. Obviously, it's easy for me to say because this year worked out for the SEC, but, you know, another year it might not. So, you know, I also think it's going to drive teams, you know, to schedule tougher opponents. I think if we go to 18 playoffs, you know, I don't want to see people just create a totally cupcake non-conference schedule, you know, win their conference and, you know, in a down year and then get to the playoff. You know, I want to see marquee matchups. So there's a lot of reasons, but, you know, and I feel, you know, bad for Central Florida, but, I know they beat Auburn, who beat this, you know, the 2 teams, but, you know, I know that's an unpopular opinion, but Central Florida, I don't think was better than either of those teams we saw last night, even though they had a fantastic season, and they should be congratulated for that. But I think the system worked, and we got the best team. And, again, I get what that sounds like coming from a guy who graduated from Alabama. But I think looking at it on the field last night and trying to put on my best objective glasses I can, you know, that's what I think. And I think when you go with 8 teams, you know, like there's going to be years where you're looking at that 7 and 8, and those are just not good teams. That they're not teams that deserve to be in a playoff, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I guess here, one of my reasonings for Barrett is I feel like right now, oftentimes that first Saturday in December is more of a bullet-dodging affair for a top team as opposed to a significant win. For example, you know, what upside did some of these teams have this past year, like Wisconsin, to win their their conference championship outside of just winning their conference championship. In other words, the conference championship doesn't hold as much value now with the current system. And so I'd like an objective path in for five teams and then to have that subjective path for the other three. And that way you still maintain that debate. I didn't know if you dissent because you didn't like the added game and you've run the gauntlet and played for the national championship.
Well, that's part of it too. That's a great point too. I mean, they already played too many games that, you know, I definitely think the added game is a huge factor to consider. I mean, these kids are in college and, you know, now they're getting up to where they're starting to play an NFL type season. So that's another factor as well.
Final question for you as an Alabama guy. And did you play at Missouri in 2012 or were you already gone at that point?
I did, yes, sir.
And I recall, Doug, there, I don't know if you remember the sound, there's sound of the Alabama huddle before taking the field and then saying, let's get the hell out of this asshole. I don't think...
Wasn't that when they had the big storm?
Yes, it was very rainy. I think there was a delay.
Well, I was about to say, that's not because anything had to do with Missouri. It had to do with the fact that it was literally a torrential downpour.
Nonstop.
Where we were, like, you know, slipping and sliding with, like, some kind of... slip and slide out there in the backyard where I remember I cut a guy and I had like a 10-yard runway where I was just sliding hydroplaning across the water. So, it was an absolutely crazy day.
But my question was, there's a sense from some Missouri fans and or a sense among some SEC fans that Missouri doesn't fit in with the SEC. So you've played for the best of the best, winning three national championships at Alabama. How do you feel about, in particular, Missouri, but Missouri and A&M now as part of the SEC?
I think Missouri's been a great addition to the SEC. I mean, I think they've, obviously they've played in the SEC championship game a few times, and I think they're getting better and better. They had a tremendous second half of the season. I mean, I absolutely think they're a great fit for the SEC. I think it expands the fan base, which is obviously what you want if you're an SEC fan, and definitely if you're in the office of the commissioner of the SEC. So I love Missouri being in. I love playing up there, and you know, being a guy who lived in Missouri, as well as lived down here in the South, I think it was cool to be up there and see that. So I think Missouri has a ton of potential coming back next season and to have a really good team. So I definitely wouldn't make any changes there because I think they've been a good fit for the conference.
Did you know the Rams were going to move when you were playing for the Rams?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everyone knew the Rams were going to move. You know, that was the worst kept secret out there. And it was Kroenke. Anyway, there's a lot I could say about that, but I think pretty much everyone knew it was going to happen eventually, based on some of the stuff they were doing.
Well, you said there's a lot you could say about it. Feel free to share.
Well, you know, it was just a mess, and I hated it because I love St. Louis and I love being there, and I didn't really feel like there was much of an honest effort made to stay. I think they wanted to leave the whole time and kind of behaved that way accordingly. And I thought it was unfair to the fan base, and I'm sure you guys would agree. So, you know, as a player, it created an awkward situation for us where people didn't want to go to the games, and I didn't blame them. It's never fun being in that situation and having to play in a situation that kind of distracts you from what's really going on.
God bless you, sir.
Did you hear from management and coaches that it was kind of destined that they were moving?
You know, there's certain things you hear, and there's certain things you just kind of it's hard. They're not said in words, but you just kind of know. I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, just kind of the way people act and the way they treat certain things, and you know, then you're going to training camp in California, and there's all kind of different things and signs that were pretty clear.
Such a shame. It really is. And we appreciate your honesty. I mean, everybody knew you were an incredibly bright guy while you were playing. And I'm glad that I know that while the health situation didn't work out, that not a surprise you've landed on your feet and doing very well in broadcasting. So congratulations on that, Bear. Congratulations to Roll Tide on the win again last night. And thank you for being honest about your experience here in St. Louis, because even though it's been a couple years, it still pisses us off.
I love the – I think it's a great sports town in St. Louis, and I love my time there. It's a great city, and I'd say I've lived in a lot of cities now, and to me, I think St. Louis is underrated. It's a really great spot, a lot of great people. So I had a great time there, and really appreciative to all the fans and the people who treated me well while I was there.
God bless you, man. Thanks so much, Barrett.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Barrett Jones with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. I just figured I'd fire that bullet right at the end with nothing to lose, and holy smokes.
They knew they were moving.
Yeah, I think everyone knew.
Well, you haven't had people saying bluntly. I've had conversations with people who you would certainly consider major players in it, who I'm still trying to get on the record on that. But there was
people in the office knew. I mean, people knew. I don't have names, but I have people that know people in the front office that knew that arrangements were already being made to move. It's what it is. He didn't seem to appreciate that that sort of behavior.
I would clip that off and play that on the remainder of the shows throughout the course of the day. Because we haven't had a former player say it like that. Not that that, again, it's not like we're like, hold on a second. They knew they were moving to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's kind of now, that, now that the cards have been turned over.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a lot of talk among players.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of them. And understand, I mean, I also don't think many fans in St. Louis don't, you know, would fault players. You're 22 years old, you're not from here, and you can be a multimillionaire in LA. I mean, you know, I don't blame. But if you feel like your organization's not operating honestly, that's pretty tilting. The thing on the whole deal, and we played the Bill DeWitt. I think we played the Bill DeWitt. Do we play the Bill DeWitt? Yeah. Okay. Right. That I just don't get, and that's what Bill DeWitt the Third didn't get either. And I've never seen that guy. I mean, I have to say he doesn't get fired up. He just, you know, internalizes it, understandably so. There's no need to give people headlines. But is just like kicking the city on the way out. Like, what was the point of that? I get you wanting to move to LA. I said it for years while we would discuss this thing. I get it. And unfortunately, because St. Louis built a stadium without a team, didn't have much leverage in the negotiation, so you have a clause that allows a team to leave after 20 years, you know, that's the hand. But what in the hell on the way out? But whatever. That's the steamer. That's the steamer.
You think that was him, or might that have been Dimoff?
I mean, he has to sign off on it.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. All I can think was it was their way of saying, how dare you try to stop us from doing exactly what we want to do. And not only did we win and get our way, but here's another punch in the teeth.
The whole thing was petty and unnecessary.
Classy group. Oh, well.
Well, here are the Barstool Chicks on...
Yeah, let's get to something better.
They're weighing in on...
Not so depressing.
On cleavage at the Golden Globes?
All right.
Everyone wore black, it was powerful. And then, if you don't know who Blanca Blanco is, you do now.
Now you do.
She wore all red, didn't give a f-. Jennifer Aniston does not age. I would love to know her secret. Someone tell me, because I want to look like that when I grow up.
Unreal. To wrap it up,
shout out to the boobs.
Shout out to the boobs. Everyone had to wear black, so everyone let the cleavage come out to play. The older woman,
Sharon Stone,
Gina Davis, like, their boobs looked amazing.
Sharon Stone's boobs look phenomenal. Kate Hudson, shout out to her fake boobs.
Yeah, her plastic surgeon's really one of the best. She's had these fake boobs for a while now, but like, she had the plunging neckline, killed it. Looked awesome.
Golden Globes, shout out to the boobs.
Shout out to the boobs.
Fran back, by the way.
Was that, well, Francation's back.
Fran? Yeah, Francation is back. Killed it, of course.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. They showed boobs on a red carpet. Haven't seen that before.
No, never happened.
Yeah, it was a pretty...
First time ever.
Pretty miserable.
Why don't you broad show your boobs and maybe more people will watch.
Okay, Iggy.
You got 100,000 on Instagram followers, so they're doing their thing. And they got a couple guys on the text line that
for
really
those kind
enjoy
of segments,
them.
They have 100,000 people.
I think they do more than those segments. Maybe they do, I think they do some online polls and maybe a shout out or two.
Sounds fantastic.
We have, what, 14 listeners?
I can't believe I'm not a follower of that. Because it is really insightful, pointed commentary.
Now, the Sea Monster has brought us the Barstool Chicks. And for my money, it's one of the greatest things he's brought to the show. But I have to tell you this. I just checked the text inbox after our discussion on Barrett Jones and also after enjoying that clip, which was provocative. But the one of the great things about the Sea Monster is that he knows guests who us in here wouldn't even think about having on the show, and then they wind up being outstanding guests. So Barrett Jones, people were loving that interview even before he gave his surprise Rams experience, Rams leaving St. Louis, honest assessment. So that's another, that's a little brief tip of the cap. I mean, you know, you hear from the Plowhawk, you hear from Iggy, they're in here, but the Sea Monster actor, he has the intuition to know who to get on the radio presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, the Sea Monster.
And Barrett Jones didn't have to say anything. I mean, he could have been polite and said, you know, I'd rather not comment. He was really nice about it, and I'm glad to hear a former player actually speak the truth about it. That was really nice.
And he really loves Saban.
Which he should, though. I think he wants his kid to play for Saban someday.
It shows just the other side.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they had a lot of success down there. I'm sure he got to play all the time. He was an All-American. I'm sure he was. He got the great treatment from him. Well, what would there not be to like about a coach that plays you all the time and you're an All-American and you're winning the national champion?
Well, maybe he'd be a taskmaster. Maybe he would have unreal expectations. Maybe he wasn't down to earth. Maybe he was just there for the glory of himself. But Barrett said none of those things are true and that Saban's a great guy who really cares for his players. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a nice look at the other side of the image that you portray for Saban.
I'm sure it's not unusual to find players who love their coach, whose coach puts out a less than likable image to the rest of the world.
Not just Saban, but you see on the sidelines, not just championship games, but every game, guys on the sidelines in their jeans and their jerseys that never dress out. Do you think the coaches even know their names?
Oh, yeah. Probably the assistants do. I don't know if the head guy...
Let's just take Saban last night.
I would think so.
15, 20 guys on the sidelines with their jerseys on, jeans. They never get to play, never dress out. Do you think Saban knows their names?
Probably does. Probably.
In college, everybody dresses. They're injured. Am I right? This isn't like the NFL where you have scratches.
I don't know. I think there's players that make the team but don't dress.
I think people
remember
that
when they weren't going to have Rudy dress, but he was on the team.
Doug, you do remember that.
I do. Yeah.
This is for Rudy, coach.
Nice. But there's players that probably don't get scholarships, their walk-ons to fill certain voids, but they don't dress out. I wonder if major coaches like Saban even talk to those guys.
Guys, Barrett Jones gave great insight and graduated from Bama with an accounting degree and a 4.0 GPA and got his master's with a 4.0 GPA. Then we have the Barstool chicks talking about boobs. Quite the transition. That's from Craig, the CPA.
More in our wheelhouse.
Right. Tim would love a Barrett Jones interview on the Tim McKernan podcast. That's from Daddy Padre. Doug, that's your guy, Daddy Padre. Blues netminder. I wonder if he'll be between the pipes tonight.
No, he against won't the be. Panth- he won't be. He's not appeared in a
Daddy
game yet.
Daddy Padre, big boy. Daddy Padre, big boy.
That's who you want to be in the Nets tonight.
Daddy Padre, big boy.
No, he won't be in the Nets tonight for the Blues.
Injun Joe's Cave Ride Magic Man is sending in pictures of his fiance.
Why?
I don't know.
Injun Joe's Copyright Magic Man.
Doug, did you vote on the poll on the fan page?
No.
I haven't even told you what the poll...
Oh, okay. No, what was the poll? I'm sure it was fascinating.
If a presidential election were held on November 6th, 2018, who would you want to run? Who do you think won?
Are we talking run for the Democrats or the Republicans?
It was not specified, I have to be honest.
Who do we want to run?
Mm-hmm.
What was the date?
November 6th, 2018. So it would be election day of 2018, the midterm.
Well, it wasn't. Oprah was the hot choice as of Sunday night, so I'll say Oprah won.
The cat, you want to take a guess?
I'm going to go Phil Hellmuth.
Let's see. He didn't get any votes. That's surprising. I won.
You did.
Well, isn't that...
On the fan pin? How many votes, please?
I guess 61 plus 364. I beat out Joe Biden by 9.
Did Doug get any votes?
Let's see.
I wouldn't think so, no.
I'm looking. Not at this moment.
Not a single.
And how many total votes for this scientific poll?
I guess when you do the math, probably like 200 maybe?
All right, so that's legit.
Yeah. I don't know if I can't. I want to first see what Iggy does with Biff at the AVNs.
Mm-hmm.
Can I make a suggestion? You start a campaign fund and you use that money for whatever you need in your personal life. Then you explain it all later.
So in
case you run, you have all your lemmings give you the money.
Okay.
And then when it's time to run, you don't, but you've already spent the money on yourself. That seems to be the move in politics.
Sweet. All right.
Would they have a lot of skeletons in your closet to come up and run against
you? It might
you?
Surprise you to hear I'm a sexual deviant.
You got a dossier or anything?
I'm an agnostic sexual deviant, and I don't know how that's going to play in the election.
It doesn't seem to matter anymore.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
We just go for whoever is the biggest celebrity instantly. Oh, president.
You know, I said this on the fan page. And I really do feel strongly about it. It was a high risk post. It's totally like the way you don't handle social media for those of us who actually have jobs where you can lose them based on social media, which is just so asinine. But whatever, it's the world we live in and we know the rules and whatever. But anyway, I was on no sleep yesterday, as I noted. So behaving irresponsibly. And I posted something, and I do really feel strongly about this. And I guess I'll paraphrase because I don't have the post up. And by God, I'm talented enough to do it from memory. But the Oprah Winfrey speech, I was like, damn, that was phenomenal, both in its content and also her ability to deliver it. However, there's this recent phenomenon in American culture that if somebody delivers a great speech, that suddenly they're talked about as being in the mix to run for president. And I just, for the life of me, just disagree with that. There was talk of it, you know, from a Republican standpoint. And granted, it wasn't like as much now as you're hearing about Oprah Winfrey. But with Ivanka Trump's speech last summer at the GOP convention and, you know, Barack Obama's speech in 2004 at the DNC put him on the map. And I would think, I mean, I guess people who are Republicans probably wouldn't say it was a successful presidency. I think history will view it, you know, currently it is ranked as a successful presidency. But with that said, just because Oprah Winfrey has, to her immense credit, taken herself out of poverty and rose to the success that she's had, clearly seems to be a very honorable and good person, brilliant entrepreneur, relates to people in a way that I don't know if we've seen anybody else do in media. I can't compliment her enough. With that said, that doesn't qualify her to handle foreign policy. That doesn't qualify her to understand the dynamics in the House and the Senate. God, I can't even imagine the hundreds or thousands of other things that would come with being president. Now, I know what immediately people say, well, what about the guy in there right now? And I understand that. But for the most part, the preceding 44 have had some form of experience in governmental leadership, whether that be on a lower level or a senator or a congressman. So I really think that, and this isn't an indictment of Oprah Winfrey in any capacity. It's an indictment of American pop culture and political media that if somebody can deliver a great speech, that suddenly they become presidential. And I think that is a high risk move. And again, I acknowledge with an asterisk, I recognize the situation in the White House now, but I would like to think this is more of an outlier than a precedent. And there is my official hot take of the moment.
I think the party conventions have long been looked at as pointing out the rising stars. It's happened, you know, many times where someone gave a great speech at a convention and they're looked upon as a rising star within that party. I think with Oprah, a lot of people talked about her with the success of Donald Trump coming from media as someone who could also do it, but from the other side, and she did give a great speech, but I agree that doesn't necessarily mean A, that you'll get elected, or B, that you'll do a good job once elected.
No, if the most important thing is just being able to deliver a speech, then we're going to have actors as president for the rest of our time.
I understand it. It's wonderful to be inspired. I wasn't expecting that. You know, I was watching the Golden Globes, and I realized it's in vogue to say, oh, it's going to be the Hollywood elites, and to me it was... really, I don't like to say over the top because it's like across the line. Where is the top? Where is the line? But, you know, it's just like this monstrous echo chamber, and it'd be the same thing if I were sitting there watching Tucker Carlson or Hannity or something like that. So but with that said, I was not expecting that. I was upstairs initially, and then I came downstairs. I'm like, my God, this is captivating, and really more importantly, how it resonated with women. So, you know, I can't relate to that crap. As we've said a number of times when we talk about the Harvey Weinstein thing, I'm almost embarrassed for being so oblivious to how commonplace this crap has been for women. I had no idea. And like I said, I guess that's irresponsible. I don't know how I would have known, but at the same time, either way, you got to listen. And the manner with which she was able to tell the story and to convey the message, even if you didn't agree with it for whatever reason, her ability to articulate that and to deliver it was so damn impressive. With that said, that does not qualify one to be the president. And again, I reckon before, I understand you have Donald Trump as president. I get that. But let's focus on the ones before, because you don't want a precedent set. Oh, wow, he can really, or she can really speak well. So therefore, you know, that, and I do think it's an important trait. I think it's, Ronald Reagan, if you don't want to cite Barack Obama's oratory skills, great speaker. You know, JFK, great speaker. The cat, you said Jimmy Carter performed at halftime.
He never did.
Yeah.
So I guess that's important. But I'm not going to vote for KDOT, and I think he's got the sickest lyrics in the game right now. So I just, it's an odd thing, and I don't recall this really being, wow, maybe he or she should be president because of the speech he or she delivered. I mean,
no, but you've seen at conventions where one of the young up-and-coming stars in a party captures everybody's attention and puts themselves on the map for that party. It
Fine,
is different
but what
to
is
have
their policy and what is their ability to lead?
Doesn't matter.
You're much more usually,
interested
but,
in that.
No, but usually they have some sort of background in politics as they're part of either the Republican or Democratic Party. This is different because it happened at the Golden Globes.
We have such...
But it happens with a backdrop of the current president of the United States being a guy who came from television. So you see that it can happen that way. I'm not saying that's the right way. But I don't think there's any debate. It was a great speech. She did not waste a word.
No. But we have such short attention spans and such prisoner of the moment thinking that someone gave a good speech. Let's give them the most powerful position in the world. It's just crazy. Nowadays, if you're not a well-known celebrity before you run, I don't know how much chance you have. Someone who looks like, not that he would make a good president, I'm not saying he would, but if you look like Mitch McConnell, you have no hope. You could be the smartest, most brilliant statesman in the world, but if you don't have the look and if you don't have the way of talking, we're not interested.
Yeah, you're right. Outside of the fact that I'm a sexual deviant and agnostic, let's include short and bald. That might be more damaging than being a sexual deviant and agnostic.
You couldn't get in.
Right.
We've never had a president like that. You got to go back to the Martin Van Buren in that era.
Mitt Romney had the look, but was a little stiff in his delivery, and that didn't play well.
Well, he
and
went against someone who had an even better look and an even smoother way of talking.
But I think Mitt wasn't a great speaker, and that would hamstring him if he chose to run again, which his name is popping up more now. And then people labeled him as the rich kid Silver Spoon, and I don't think he had the ability to shed that on his own because I don't think he's a great communicator. Being a great communicator is a huge plus for any candidate.
It is in any business. Usually the people that make it to the top of any business are the ones who speak the best. Usually. Not always. But you look at CEOs and the major companies around the country and the world, it's usually people that communicate very well.
Guys, no matter what Oprah says, she gave the world Dr. Phil, so no thank you. That comes from Pete from Staten Island.
And then I saw all these people when I guess NBC tweeted out our next president, whatever, and people got bristled about that, but then people were tweeting out pictures of her and Weinstein.
Yeah.
She knew.
That's not a good look.
But I mean,
you think
because she
had
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know enough about it, but just because someone tweets out pictures of two people doesn't mean that she did know.
No.
I don't know.
I think most of those people who stood up and gave their speeches about it's time that we did something, I think they all knew. They've all known. It's a small business out there. You think they don't talk about it?
Yeah,
almost
if somebody
each other?
Were sexually harassed, I mean, I don't know on that. I don't know on that.
Oh, I bet they did.
I don't know on
that.
Well,
I think a lot of people had to know.
I think there might have been rumors, but like you really know.
I think agents knew when they were firing up
there. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm saying is I know from my personal experience, again, it's not in Hollywood, but I had no idea just in general that this stuff goes on. And so now over the last few months, I've had conversation with women and they just like, oh, the stuff I've heard. And I go, God, really? I can't. Yeah. Believe that. I'm not saying I don't believe you. I'm like, what in the hell makes a guy think he can do that? Or I just for real.
They've gotten away with it forever. I mean, the talk of the Hollywood casting couch, that's been around forever. It's not just a joke. It happens.
I get it, but I'm talking about like St. Louis business. That, you know, I mean, I understand the Hollywood.
Yeah,
I'm
talking about St. Louis. Women are probably harassed in a lot of different fields.
I can't imagine. I mean, I believe it, but I can't imagine what some women have had to go through.
A pic of Trump with Weinstein, too. Did he know, Doug? That's from the 314.
He probably knew, sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
they probably all know.
We knew, but I don't know.
I think the folks at the top of the industry knew. I think the producers and agents had to know that this guy was a president.
Well, I don't know on that one. But I do know that it was well known in comedy circles about the rumors that Louis C.K. would do what he later admitted to do with female comedians.
Sickness.
You know, So that because I heard Sarah Silverman on with Stern, and she was talking
about
that.
And we've seen it. And the reason I know it goes on in every industry, every type of job, but I think when it comes to media, there are some people that have delusions of grandeur where I could see someone who's a star thinking they can do whatever they want, or that this woman might enjoy seeing an 85-year-old guy naked for no, you know. You got to be kidding yourself. Well,
and some of the media did nothing to help stop it. When Corey Feldman came out and claimed people were pedophiles when he was a kid, no one, they brushed it off. Ah, yeah, right. And when Ronan Farrow tried to tell NBC, this is what's happening, they said, I'm not interested in that story.
Well.
So even when faced with witnesses saying, here's what's happening, a lot of people in the media said, no, we're not interested in that.
The point overall, as I have to wrap for the purpose of getting to emails where my co-host will be sexually harassed, is that while Oprah's speech was phenomenal, I'm a little concerned by how that then leads to talk, which was really the lead of the news cycle yesterday. It was the second story on NBC Nightly News about Oprah Winfrey as a presidential candidate.
Yeah.
Just going.
We may have to get to the point where we'll say, to be president, you have to have had military experience. If you're going to be the commander-in-chief and control the world's most powerful army, you have to have some experience in that area, and then maybe we'll stop electing reality TV
stars.
Well,
guess what? Part of Trump's charm to some was that he was not someone who was part of the political machine. People got tired of him. I'm not saying he was the right choice. I don't even care. I'm just saying that was part of his allure.
Here's the, we don't usually hear, I've heard about this text name. It's become it's the talk of the producing community here at 590, and I finally got one on the show. The text says, there is no picture of Trump and Weinstein together, just another dumbass Democrat talking BS, and that comes from Big Racist. And I heard about this guy.
I haven't seen a Trump picture with him. It might exist. Weinstein was all over the place. He's probably got a picture with everybody.
But that doesn't mean someone new, because there's a picture that exists. That's what I'm saying with Oprah. People were tweeting that out. And I'm not saying she knew based on picture.
Boys, I got to wrap it up. Football fans, it's go time. That means it's time to step up with bold flavor, the official Bloody Mary of the morning after Major Peters. Made in St. Louis using over 90% real tomato juice, Major Peters Bloody Mary mix will make your game time festivities a major success. Check it out at majorpeters.com, Major Peters Bloody Mary mix, St. Louis, Missouri. Time for the Hot Shots email of the day. And dee-dee-dee, giving away tickets to Werenberg Theaters. Movie passes at Marcus Werenberg Theaters. See movies for only $5 every Tuesday. Plus, rewards members receive free popcorn. I want to see that Molly's game. And you saw that, right, Plowhawk?
Very good. Very good.
Howdy, our bags are packed and our passports are ready. The wife and I are set for our trip halfway around the world to that most exotic foreign country, the Illinois Peninsula. We're taking a cruise to get there, and when I say cruise, I mean the Brussels ferry. We can't wait to hold hands on the deck and watch the romantic brown waters lap against the hull. We'll gaze upon the grandeur of the dilapidated shacks swallowed up by the flood of 93, then stop in the quaint little village of Batchtown to pick rotten apples. I've been brushing up on my Calhounese so I can talk to the locals in Hardin. What critters are they fitting to fry up at the speedboat race, I'll ask. I'll bring you guys back some souvenirs, maybe some I Heart the Golden Eagle Ferry t-shirts and some slimy peaches. Bonjour. That's from Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech. Going on a trip.
Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech. Going on a trip.
Lesbian tales, the beginning. Daddy issues. He had just remarried, and my new stepmom was hopping mad about all the attention I was getting at the reception in my yellow sundress and hot high heel pumps. She took me into the coat closet, pinned me to the wall with her butchy strong arms, and said, this is my house now, bitch. So please me now. Later, as I lay there, both embarrassed and sexually drained in the dark, I decided to make something of myself and go to bikini modeling school. So long for now, dairy cow.
Bikini modeling. So
I didn't even say it. So you've read these emails.
I could tell after the first sentence.
They're getting worse.
Guys, Plops here. Not sure if I told you guys about the publishing company I started recently. Oh, yeah. It's huge. We recently signed our first author, and that man is Doug Vaughn. He'll be releasing a coffee table book this spring. More of a picture book, really. It's called Staging My Dog Bandit for Cute and Silly Facebook Pics.
I like that.
how to win at this game called life with a Facebook page made up of 85% dog posts that 60-year-old women will comment on by Douglas Vaughn. Mm-hmm. Chapter one is an absolute riot. How to make it look like your dog watching TV. I have to say, I like these posts by pinning a remote under his paw. Chapter eight is my fave so far. It's called When My Dog is Asleep. I like to take pictures of him and pretend he's passed out drunk. Reserve your copy today. Visit www.sexwithablackgentleman.com.
Oh, he's new.
How in the hell?
Sexwithablackgentleman.com.
Clip that off. No, it's Plops.
Oh, Misty Plops.
No, I'm not done. Oh. He's telling me where you can order the book.
Oh, okay.
That's I got really excited by that.
Sexwithablackgentleman.com. Now, these are two separate web addresses. And enter the keyword yes for a limited edition mushroom stamped copy. Mm. Hey, did someone dip his thumb in ink and run it across the spine of this book? Nope, that's a mushroom stamp, guy. Mm-mm. Thanks, that's from Misty Plops.
Misty Plops.
Did you give him any check marks?
Assistant program director.
Oh, well, there goes nipples.
Tim, by the way, Hoffman said he changed that guy's name to Big Races so he knew to ignore that bigoted F. That's from Stubby Applause. Ah, so Hoffman does change names. That was big. That's intel. Plowboy, you just did the Jordan swish.
I was right, and I still love Hoffman, but I just had a feeling.
Stubby Applause.
Morn, hi. I hear your waffle fries are the best in the area. I'll have two orders. Also, a side of General Tso's chicken. Wow, these seem to be a bit salty. Can I wash them down, boy? Let me moisten them, boy. Whip out that chamby pot and just let me dollop these spuds with some of that steamy, rewarding
okay, that's
juice.
Set up.
Think about it. It's Tunnels 12,000.
Tunnels 12,000.
This looks like a picture of like an Asian IT gentleman kind of wearing one of those work badges. Is that who Tunnels 12,000 is?
He's Deke Dotum.
That might be Dennis. That might be Dennis Fung.
He's been suspended a period of 2 days' time.
I think that's who it is.
His name just now went into the... Hot shot, leather-bound suspension log unit.
So I guess I don't email for a while and everything goes to hell. The soft media is afraid to address anything in this town. Vaughn, there's a group of broads in my neighborhood to get together and watch The Bachelor, so take that fancy car out to Wildwood, tuck your junk between your legs, and sip some Pinot Noir with these yentas while they trash their husbands and talk about absolutely nothing. Hayes, I think Kirby Smart said they lost because they couldn't find a place to practice over the holidays. Stop it. You call yourself a coach and your team score 8 points? Are you kidding me? You get your hairy shoulders over to the JCCA or whatever, and you tell them you're going to practice. And you run those kids until their tongues hit the floor. McCurkin, quit subbing for your wife and take yourself down to One Cardinal Place and get your pincers around that bow tie and find out why they are so cheap and won't spend the money to bring the players to St. Louis. You don't need to sell them on the city. This is the greatest city in America. Do they know who they are playing for? The best fans in baseball. Someone in this town needs to hold them accountable. Tired of it. Mm-hmm. That's from Black Panther Steve in Wildwood.
Black Panther Steve in Wildwood.
And that's what we have for the Hot Shots email today. Show me what you got, little mama. Show me what you got, little lady.
I put three check marks next to two, Black Panther Steve and Plops. And I hate to do it, but I got to go with the best. It's Plops.
I didn't think it was. I thought the best was Bikini Model Britain.
Well, you're going to lose.
Wow. Well, congratulations to Misty
you're
Plops.
You're going to lose.
Lucas.
This is fun because now Misty Plops has won the first two emails. This week, kind of like what we saw last week from Mr. Nipples. You see people kind of establishing early on that this is going to be a big year for him. And it's no surprise to the Plowboy that Mr. Nipples is having a big year, but Misty Plops has always been... Misty Plops like Alabama.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. The Plops answers like Alabama did.
Is Mr. Nipples Central Florida?
Champion.
Time for us to shut it down. Frank's up next. He does a real program. It's called the Hollywood Casino Press Box for the Plowhawk, for Iggy, for the Sea Monster, for my brother Kevin, for Douglas Elvin Vaughn, and for Jimmy the Cat Hayes. I'm Tim McCurtain. This has been the Ryan Kelly Morning After on 590 The Fan, KFNS.